Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of the Football History Headlines on the Best of the Pigskin Dispatch, we discuss the tale of the fascinating story of the 1922 Rose Bowl game, as well as many more Hall of Fame legendary stories. These and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are here for another day's events. The date of January 2nd in football history has some really outstanding birthdays of Hall of Famers to celebrate and some events that really, I think you'll go back and you'll say, hey, I remember that one, or at least you've read about it or heard about it. And I think you're really going to enjoy this. So stay tuned for this Best of the Pigskin Dispatch. And our first story is our feature story, and it's a very interesting one, and it happens from January 2nd, 1922, in Tournament Park, Pasadena, California. If you remember from yesterday's podcast, the Rose Bowl was played at Tournament Park until 1926, when the Rose Bowl itself was built, and in the stadium called the Rose Bowl ended up using its name for the game, the Rose Bowl, but these games are considered the Rose Bowl. So the 8th Rose Bowl game, which was one actually at the Rose Bowl, had a small college from Pennsylvania, Washington and Jefferson, against the University of California. The washjeff.edu internet page shares an interesting tale from the game. The Golden Bears were the top team in the West Coast, and W&J were undefeated in 1921 and the best team on the east side of the nation. The Bears, though, were a heavy favorite. 14 points was the reported spread of the contest, as W&J, with a mere 450 students, was the smallest school ever to participate in a Rose Bowl game. It's an interesting billing right there. The best of the East versus the best of the West theme. But the story of the president's trek to Pasadena is where I want to dive into. During the undefeated season of W&J's football, their roster of 17 young men showed that only 11 of them participated on game days. Yes, it's hard for us to fathom in this era of the gridiron platooning and specialist system, but the presidents had just 11 fellas that stayed on the field and balled out every snap. The coach of this Great Western PA group was a legendary Greasy Neal, who is both a great player and a coach, not only on the gridiron, but on the baseball diamond too. From a football perspective, Greasy would go on to lead the Philadelphia Eagles teams as their head coach in the 1940s on the sidelines. The football budget for Washington Jefferson in 1920 was extremely tight. In fact, they only had enough dough to send 11 players to the Rose Bowl. The athletic administrator of the school himself reportedly had to mortgage his home to be able to attend the game. A major issue would occur on the team's cross-country travel. One of these 11 players on the trip, C.L. Spillers, it's reported, contracted pneumonia and had to be left in Kansas City. W&J now faced the great threat of not having enough players to field a full squad in the bowl game. Author E. Lee North's narrative titled Battling the Indians, Panthers, and Nittany Lions, The Story of the Washington Jefferson's College First Century of Football, 1890 to 1990, says that one of these reserve players, Bucky Buchanan, was stowed away on the train and that he was given Spiller's ticket when it was found that he could not continue on the journey. Another story from the December 28, 1921 New York Tribune states that the team wired home to have another reserve, Al Haddon, sent to take Spiller's place. The evidence of Buchanan being in the Pasadena team photos and not Haddon gives some credence to the stowaway story. Plus, it makes the whole thing a lot more legendary and nostalgic. Better story. Anyway, the Presidents made it to Pasadena and fielded 11 to play in what would be the final game at Tournament Park. W&J's quarterback Charles West gave the game another breakthrough moment as he became the first signal caller of African-American descent to play in the granddaddy of them all. The game was a defensive battle throughout. Cal's offense could muster only 49 yards on the ground and did not even complete one pass. The Presidents did not fare much better, as their 114 yards rushing was about it for the offensive stats. In the end, Washington Jefferson and Cal tied 0-0 in the only scoreless Rose Bowl game ever. W&J's captain, Russ Stein, was voted as the game's most outstanding player, and he went on to play in the NFL, was inducted in the Rose Bowl Hall of Fame in 1991. On the 2nd of January 1928, it was a close one in the 14th Rose Bowl when Stanford Cardinal outlasted the Pittsburgh Panthers by the score of 7-6. The 1956 edition of the Sugar Bowl, which was played on January 2nd that year, Pitt's Bobby Greer was the racial trailblazer as he became the first African-American player to break the color barrier in the segregated Deep South. January 2, 1956, the 22nd Orange Bowl was a battle of highly ranked teams. The contest as number 1 ranked Oklahoma Sooners got past the number 3 Maryland Terrapins 20-6. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
January 2nd, 1961, at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, in a slight upset, the number 6 Washington Huskies knocked off the top-ranked team in the country, the Golden Gophers of Minnesota, 17-7. Now for some news from the professional level. January 2nd, 1965, the New York Jets signed future Pro Football Hall of Fame quarterback Joe Namath to a record contract in the professional football. It was sounds small by today's standards, but Namath and the Jets agreed to a $427,000 contract over 3 years. I think that's what veteran minimum is now for 1 year in the NFL. January 2nd, 1966, at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, the Cleveland Browns made their way to Wisconsin to battle the Packers in the final National Football League Championship game before the Super Bowl started a year later. This 1965 NFL Championship game was the first league title game broadcast in televised color. The teams exchanged passing TDs in the first quarter, according to the box score on the ProFootballReference.com website. The Browns could only muster 2 Lou Groza field goals the rest of the game, while the Pack added a Paul Hornung touchdown run and 3 Don Chandler three-pointers to steal the title. The Green Bay Packers defeated the Cleveland Browns 23-12 in this last championship game of the pre-Super Bowl era of pro football. January 2nd, 1972, at Miami's Orange Bowl, the 1971 AFC Championship game matched the Baltimore Colts up against the Miami Dolphins per the ProFootballReference.com website. The Dolphins showed the league a little of what was to come as they beat the Baltimore Colts 21-0 as Paul Warfield and Larry Zonka each scored offensive touchdowns for the Finns, while defender Dick Anderson added a 62-yard pick six for good measure. January 2nd, 1982, the epic in Miami. In the 85-degree Fahrenheit heat, the San Diego Chargers defeated the Miami Dolphins 41-38 in overtime in the AFC Divisional Playoff game, a game that set numerous playoff scoring records. January 2nd, 1983, in a 35-27 win over the Houston Oilers, Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Ken Anderson completed 20 consecutive passes and finished the season winning his second consecutive passing title with an NFL record of 70.55% completion percentage. That comes from the OnThisDay.com website. Now, here's some more threads that came from the OnThisDay.com website. There was some quick hitter scores. January 2nd, 1984, the 50th Orange Bowl, number 5 Miami of Florida, beats number 1 Nebraska 31-30. January 2nd, 1987, at the 16th Fiesta Bowl, number 2 Penn State beats number 1 Miami 14-10 in a thriller. January 2nd, 1989, the 18th Fiesta Bowl, number 1 Notre Dame defeats number 3 West Virginia 34-21 for the national title. January 2nd, 2012, a very exciting and high-scoring Fiesta Bowl was witnessed as the top 5 teams squared off with number 3 Oklahoma State matched up against number 4 Stanford, as covered by the ESPN.com article. Oak State signal caller Brandon Whedon threw for 390 yards and 3 touchdowns and matched his stats against Andrew Luck of the Cardinal, who tossed for 2 touchdowns and 347 yards himself. The contest lived up to its billing as the Cowboys prevailed in overtime over the Cardinal 41-38. All right, we have some great birthdays of Hall of Famers for this January 2nd, and we'll start off in the year 1912 in Canton, Illinois. Illinois Wesleyan's great tackle, Tony Blazine, arrived into the world. The NFF tells of how Tony was a 4-year letterman at his school, as they had a winning record in that era when they faced teams like Michigan State, DePaul, and Kentucky. Tony Blazine was accepted posthumously into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2002. Blazine played 8 seasons in the NFL with the Chicago Cardinals and the New York Giants. He then served as an assistant coach at the University of Illinois and the University of Washington. January 2, 1927, Smithers, West Virginia. The standout defensive end from the University of San Francisco, Gino Marchetti, was born. According to the Pro Football Hall of Fame site, Marchetti was the New York Yanks' number 2 pick in the 1950 NFL draft. The Yanks soon after that became the Dallas Texans for a season and then turned into the Baltimore Colts, and Marchetti went with them all the way through there. He was a feared defender as he went to 11 straight Pro Bowls and as an all-NFL selection in an unbelievable 9 different seasons in his 14-year NFL career. Gino was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1972. January 2, 1930, Cumberland, Maryland. Bobby Williams, the fine quarterback from the University of Notre Dame, was born. Williams, as a 19-year-old, according to the NFF, quarterbacked the 1949 Notre Dame team to 10 straight victories with a 56% completion rate and the national championship title. Bobby's best performance of this magical 1949 season came against Michigan State when he had a 50-yard punt that went out of bounds at the 4. He ran 40 yards for a touchdown on a bootleg and went 13 of 16 on some timely passing. Bob Williams was voted into the College Football Hall of Fame by the Foundation of Football Voters in 1988. January 2, 1959, from Sacramento, California, Stanford running back Darren Nelson celebrates his day of birth. Darren was a trendsetter in college football as he became the first player in NCAA history to rush for more than 1,000 yards and catch more than 50 passes in one season, per the NFF's bio on him. Darren Nelson just didn't do this one time, though. He would accomplish this feat 3 times during his standout career as a Cardinal. Nelson would finish his collegiate career as the NCAA leader for all-purpose yards, which remains a school record of 6,885. There was little doubt when the National Football Foundation selected Darren Nelson into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2014. January 2, 1964, Boston, Massachusetts. Plymouth State University's great halfback Joe Dudek arrived on the scene. Plymouth State may have only been a Division III school, but in 1985, Dudek gave them national attention, according to the footballfoundation.org website story, when Joe had his face, it was smack dab on the cover of the December 2, 1985 Sports Illustrated magazine. What an honor there. Joe's impact on college football was pretty big, as he received the highest vote ranking for a Division III player in Heisman history when he was 9th in 1985. Dudek in his college career earned the Division III All-America honor 3 times as he rushed and gained 5,570 career yards for an average of 7.1 yards per play and scored 79 touchdowns in his collegiate career. Joe Dudek made his grand entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1997. We hope that you'll join us tomorrow for the football history headlines for January 3rd, where You may have think we skipped over it a little bit today, but we're going to go back into that 1987 Fiesta Bowl game with Penn State and Miami, getting a little bit more detail because I believe it finished on January 3rd. We'll also talk about Tony Dorsett setting an NFL record. We'll talk about these and more in your football history headlines January 3rd, so make sure you subscribe. Join us at pigskindispatch.com. Go to your favorite podcast provider to find a podcast, or go to thesportshistorynetwork.com, where you'll find the Pigskin Dispatch podcast and many other great podcasts on sports history, just by going to that website, sportshistorynetwork.com, and clicking one of the great podcasts and great personalities we have on the network. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Just another ordinary day in the offices of the Pittsburgh Guardian newspaper circa 1924. But for Marla Delft, assistant editor, everything was about to change. For she was about to discover the awesome attractiveness of Row One brand retro sports paraphernalia items, thanks to Orville Mulligan, sports writer.
And there it is.
Wow, Orville, that's really the bee's knees.
Isn't it just? A poster-sized replica of the actual 1909 World Series program cover.
I can see that. But where did you get it? And where'd you get it framed?
I ordered it from the Row One website, where over 6,000 items of sports memorabilia from the 1880s to the 1990s are available for reproduction in multiple sizes and in several different materials, with over a dozen styles of frame to choose from for prints like this.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Delft would love to put up more of these in the office. But I'm equally as sure they're beyond this newspaper's budget.
Not at all, my dear Marla. See for yourself. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com/row1.
sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. Oh my, these are good prices. Oh, and look at this stuff. Oklahoma-Nebraska football. College basketball art. Michael Jordan items.
And so it was that Marla Delft discovered the splendiferous magic of Row One sports memorabilia arts and prints. You can too by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. That's ROW number one today for access to the full Row One catalog of gallery prints and gifts like t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, telephone cases, coffee mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Act today for 15% discount off all prints with coupon code SHN15 and 20% off all other items with coupon code SHN20 at checkout. And keep your dial locked to the Sports History Network for the exciting chronicles of the 1920 sports world in Orville Mulligan, sports writer, coming soon.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.